Are you a man looking for an intensive program to help you overcome your sexually addictive behaviors? Gateway to Freedom is your answer. Gateway to Freedom is a three-day intensive workshop for men seeking to overcome sexually addictive behaviors. Whether married, single, or divorced, Gateway to Freedom will help men regain hope for a new life of purity and real contentment. The workshop is conducted by experts in the field of sexual addiction recovery. Your experts have over 35 years of combined experience. Read testimonials of workshop alumni at gatewaymen.com. Get all the info and register online at gatewaymen.com or call 1-800-49-PURITY.
Hi, my name is Jonathan, and I'm the founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop. I want to personally invite you to be part of our next intensive coming up September 20th through the 22nd. So call us today at 1-800-49-PURITY or visit us online at gatewaymen.com.
Welcome to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Are you ready to get real and start living each day in purity? This dynamic program is designed to educate, encourage, and equip listeners with the tools necessary for living a life of sexual purity. Pure Sex Radio brings you the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real-life struggles, learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction, and get serious about purity.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We are glad to have you here with us. My name is Jonathan, and I've got a special guest here with me today, David Zeiler from California. So, David, how are you doing?
Jonathan, I'm doing great. Good to be here with you today.
Good. Well, before we get started, I just want to remind our listeners that we are a listener-supported broadcast, and we rely on the partnerships of folks just like you to help us keep these broadcasts on the air and get distributed out to over 80 countries around the world. And so if you are on board with our mission of healing sexual brokenness by God's grace, one story at a time, we would invite you to go to our website at puresexradio.com and click on the donate link, and then you can find out about all the ways that you can partner with us in our mission here. Well, David, I'm excited to have you on the program because I've always appreciated your story and just how God has really displayed his grace in your life as a man who was once just completely wrapped up in all kinds of sexual brokenness, but is now actually helping other guys break free from that. And so we're going to get to your story. I want our listeners to hear your story. But first, I'd like you to just share a little bit about what you're doing currently in ministry and how you're helping other guys break free.
Well, thanks, Jonathan. I'm the executive director of Operation Integrity, which is a Christ-centered recovery program. It helps people recover from addiction, leading to radical life transformation. While we address many different kinds of addictions, including, of course, the drugs and the alcohol, we're best known for our work in the area of helping people and families recover from the effects of sexual addiction and pornography addiction.
That's great. Now, in order to let our listeners know how you got to this point, we need to go backwards, and we'd love to hear some of your story. I've often told people all the time, because they ask me, how'd you get involved in like sexual purity ministry? And I always say, it's kind of like anybody who's involved in any kind of addiction recovery ministry. Either you yourself came out of an addiction, or someone you love deeply was struggling with an addiction. I don't think there's any other way that a person gets involved, unless they just get struck by lightning and God just calls them into it. I think you have to have a personal connection to it. And in your case, you have a very personal connection to the ministry that you're doing now. And so I'd like for you to take us back and kind of share with our listeners sort of where some of your sexual brokenness began, and then eventually bring us up to speed on when you got into recovery.
Well, I've heard it said that our greatest talent will generally come out of our greatest woundedness. And I think that that's kind of what it's been for me. The work that I do today, I never had any special training for it. But it has grown out of a passion and an understanding, of what it takes to make the journey. I grew up being assaulted as a child in various ways. Not the kind of assault that would end up in black eyes or broken bones, but I just, relational abandonment, both within my family and in my community. Perhaps most devastating was in my church community. I grew up in a family that was habitually centered our life around church because that was my father's job. He was a church musician, and it was, you know, pretty much dictated to the family that we would be there several times a week to put on the happy faces and, you know, and polish our shoes and comb our hair and go up and represent the image of what it was expected to look like to be a good Christian family. It was also from within this church community that I was sexually abused as a child, starting with at the age of 8 and going till the time at the age of 11 and 12 in there. And obviously that was devastating because what that did for me is that it put me in a place where the overt message of church was that this is God's people. This is the safe place. But the covert message in my experience was that this is a place that tells lies. This is a place that abuses people and then covers it up to make it look pretty and nice. And I was at the bottom of all of that. And so even as a child, it created a huge split in the fact that I'm taught and really dictated to look nice and be well-behaved. And yet on the inside, the message is that I'm worthless, that I'm being taken advantage of, and that I have to keep secrets.
Now, at those critical ages of 8 to 12, when this was going on, you share a little bit about kind of how you interpreted that as a kid in terms of connecting that with church, and this must be where, you know, the outward message is this is God's people. The inward message of your experience was these are not safe people, and they only tell you lies. What did you do to cope during those years? Because, I mean, obviously that's how you were interpreting it, but how did you cope with the abuse during those years?
Well, I'm not sure if I could even use the word cope. I think the word react would be a better word. I began to have some pretty significant behavioral issues. Of course, my grades just went in the tubes. My behavior was such that, you know, my family started taking me to doctors. The doctors were prescribing medication to alter my behavior to settle me down. I actually was diagnosed as mentally retarded at 8 years of age. Because my behavior became so extreme. I should also add, it was also this time that I discovered my father's pornography play. And so not only was I, you know, having these damaging experiences in church, I also would come home and then in secret I would peruse through my father's pornography collection, almost revisiting the abuse, not knowing, of course, at the time I didn't know that was what I was doing. You know, any 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old child, I think, is going to have a fairly understandable curiosity about sexuality. And so between the abuse and my own curiosity, I would go to my father's pornography and look through it both from the naturally occurring curiosity, but I think also trying to make sense of what was going on with me and my own feelings. So it was really kind of a double whammy thing.
Yeah, it sounds like there were multiple traumatic factors that were going on in your life simultaneously. Obviously, there's the actual sexual abuse. Then there is, and connected with your association with church, then there's pornography, which is definitely not going to help appropriately educate you on what's been going on with you abuse-wise. And to top it all off, you are being labeled as a handicapped child. So I can't, you know, I just want kind of our listeners to take a pause and just try to process the amount of trauma that is on any person's life, let alone an 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old boy. So I can only imagine that what resulted out of all of these years of abuse and all of these factors is a tremendous amount of scarring. And so why don't you share with, you mentioned that you react, you didn't really know how to use the word cope, but take us sort of out of those years, and then what happened next? I mean, how could you deal with all of those scars? Was there a numbing effect? Was there a just kind of a shutting down, or was it more you were acting out? I mean, what was going on?
Well, you know, as I moved into adolescence, I think perhaps the most damaging thing of all was not the obvious, but it was that the isolation of it. I truly was raised in a family and in an environment where weakness was punished. And if you told your secrets, there was a very good chance that you were going to be corrected, admonished at the very least, and more likely punished. Again, this was a time where people didn't talk about pornography. It was a different generation, if you will. But that dynamic of blaming the broken for their brokenness, that's something that's not just generational. That's something that is really at the core of human symptoms. I think people so want to escape their own personal sinfulness that if they see it in someone else, they do everything they can to shun it. And what happens is people get shunned.
Yeah.
So what I did to cope is I learned to act like a good boy. And I did that through adolescence. I knew that I needed to make some money. So I had a job. I was at jobs after school. My grades were terrible. I actually ended up plunking out of high school, but I always had a job. I was going to make money. I was going to get me a car. I wanted to get mobile. And if I couldn't outsmart people, and if I couldn't out-talent people or out-good-look people, I was going to outwork people.
Let me ask you real quickly. You said you got to get a car. What was the thinking behind it? Because it sounds to me like there was definitely a deep-seated desire for escape, even if you didn't know what you were running from. Or did you know what you were running from?
No, I really didn't know what I was running from. I really didn't. I was so disconnected from my own pain. I had never been able to talk about it. No one had ever allowed me to connect with it and bring it into any kind of conversation or community. So in order to avoid being stuck alone with it, I just disconnected from it. And when you talk about the car thing and the escape thing, I thank you for that, Don, because you're right on target. I became, as I moved through adolescence and into being a young man, I became an emotional escape artist. Where I would, whether it was workaholism, and then later, when I discovered alcohol and drugs and promiscuity, I was living a life that doing whatever I could do to avoid my own inner reality.
So this, you're in this sort of escape swirl during your adolescence, and you said you really kind of got engrossed in work, or you were just going to outwork everybody. What was the transition like then from adolescence to adulthood? I mean, and take us through that of what transpired there.
Well, in my early 20s, I was really a very typical guy. I had a job. even tried to go to Bible college for a little while. That didn't work out too good. And then I discovered alcohol. It was a very interesting evening. I had some friends of mine, a couple of buddies from church, invited me to go eat pizza with them. And they had ordered a pitcher of beer with their pizza. I ordered a soft drink. When I finished my soft drink, I took a little bit of the beer, put it in my soft drink glass to finish off, kind of clear out my throat, the last bit of my pizza. And almost immediately, I was very much impressed with how the alcohol made me feel. I felt taller, better looking, smarter. You know, I felt really, really good. In fact, Jonathan, it was a feeling I'm not sure that I had ever had before, where I felt just really, really good. And I remember thinking, boy, that stuff tastes really lousy, but I really like the way it makes me feel. And for the next 2 weeks, all I could think about was going back, getting some more of that pizza, and having a little bit more of that beer. And very quickly, really within a matter of a few weeks, I had, you know, there was no reason to take my buddies to go to the pizza. There was no reason to have the pizza. I was a very quickly developed alcoholic, where several nights a week, I would find the time to go get myself drunk. From there, I discovered strip joints, where I got socially connected with some of the women that worked in the strip joints. From there, I got involved with drugs. And from there, I got involved in the pornography.
And so this this alcohol that took you initially to a place that you felt like you'd never been, that where you felt taller and more attractive and good and just something, a sensation that you hadn't necessarily been familiar with, that's powerful, isn't it?
Well, it sure is. I mean, we've heard a lot of people talk about courage in a bottle. For me, it was the freedom. It was a perceived freedom. I was feeling less inhibited. It was something that brought me, it sedated the pain that I had felt for so long that I no longer even knew that I felt pain. The problem was is that it's, you know, alcohol and drug. And for many of us, it could become a poison. So I was literally infatuated, obsessed with, and very quickly dependent on something that was killing.
Now, I find it interesting that you say very quickly after that, somehow there became a connection between alcohol use and strip clubs. How did that connection come about?
Well, I'd always wanted to go into a strip joint. You know, I'd grown up looking at my father's pornography. Obviously, I'm a young man. The thought of naked women in a very sexual, erotic environment was exciting to me. But I had never had the courage. I had never, but alcohol made that possible. So I just walked in one evening after getting, I take that back. It was actually a friend of mine who he and I had been drinking together, and he took me to a strip joint and left me there. Wow. And he was driving. And fortunately, one of the young ladies that worked there, she got me home and she gave me her phone number, and she and I started dating.
Yeah. Now, and so I find it interesting that, you know, you as an adolescent, you need your car, you're running away. You don't even necessarily know what you're running away from. You just know that you're running. And yeah. Then you land in a bottle of alcohol, essentially. And it seems like for a moment, or maybe even for a season, you found what you were looking for. But then it started leading you down this path to things that were even more devastating and worse than what you could have probably imagined at the time.
Well, I think what you've just done, Jonathan, is you've just described ground zero of addiction. You know, the things that we do are very attracted to us, whether it's the pornography, the drug, the alcohol, the workaholism, the foods, you know, the obsession of controlling people, whatever it might be, we find answers of a sort. These things work for a while. They entertain us, they make us feel better, they comfort us, they become friends. But they, sooner or later, they begin to take control, because while they give us something that we learn to value, when we learn to depend on, they take more from us. It's like they give us something in, you know, to us directly, but then they're hijacking us from the back end without us ever knowing it.
Yeah.
Thereby creating even more pain, increased sense of isolation, greater confusion, which really just sets us up to once again go out and medicate someone.
So then how long were you sort of going down this path? I mean, how long before there started to be some thoughts in your head that this is probably not going to end well, this is not going in a good direction? I mean, how long did it take going down that path before you even started having thoughts like that?
Well, I think even early on, when I first started to ask myself, gosh, I wonder if I'm not you know, I would have little thoughts where I would question myself and question my behavior. But then I'd always find a way to convince myself quickly. Really, for about 7 years, I was pretty much drinking every day and doing drugs every day. Then along about 1989, by this time I'm 30 years old, I did a geographical relocate, moved here to the West Coast, and began just kind of a weekend warrior, if you will. The addiction professionals would call me at that point a periodic, where I'd go to work every day, very dutiful, you know, have a nice home, had a new job, actually had started a business, was making it successful. But on the weekends, I would drink alcohol, and then I started binging on drugs again. And at this point, I actually became the consumer of pornography, where I was using pornography most every evening as a sedative and as a sleep aid. Then on the weekends, I would go out and drink and spend time with one of the ladies that I was seeing at that point, all of whom shared the alcohol and the drugs with me. At that point, I had convinced myself that I was not labeled as an addict because I was so functional.
Right.
In fact, those of us who are addicts and who are functional, we really have the hardest time admitting to ourselves the reality of our addiction.
I was going to say, so then at what point did you start to actually acknowledge there was an addiction going on, and then what transpired to where you finally got help?
Well, I finally got help when I got arrested for drugs. In fact, I remember I was actually arrested 3 times in 1 week. All 3 arrests were for felony possession of drugs, simple possession. I remember asking one of the police officers, like, I said, have I just ruined my life? And he goes, no, I think you probably just got the help you need.
Wow.
Yeah. As he put me in his police car and took me to jail. I got an attorney, and the attorney told me I needed to get into a rehab program. So I went into a rehab program really with the intention of just staying out of jail. I didn't really want to change my life. Partly because my life was tolerable. I actually enjoyed most of it. And when it came to the addiction, I'd been struggling with this for so long, I was hopeless it would ever change. So my obsession at that point was just to try to manage it.
Right.
Fortunately for me, the treatment program I was in, of course, they addressed my addictions to drugs and alcohol. But once I was stabilized, after about a year, I was in this program for 18 months. It was amazing. But after about a year, they came to me and said, David, we're going to help you address your sexual addiction. And I was like, what? Yeah, we're going to help you address your sexual addiction. Because of my history, they were able to see one of the underlying contributors to my drug and alcohol issues was my brokenness and my, I was very promiscuous. I had several girlfriends, all of which I was sleeping with. None of them really constituted any intimacy or any quality of relationship. It was this kind of a mutual use and be used kind of interaction. And at that point, I knew that my issues were more than just drugs and alcohol. My issues were me.
Yeah.
I didn't just need to change the way I live. Of course, I needed to do that. But more than that, I needed someone, something to change me. I needed to become a different kind of human being.
So then when you started that part of the process, and we've got a few minutes left here, what started going through your mind? Because I'm sure at that point in time, I mean, you'd said, hey, I'm a functional addict, you know, even though you didn't say that in your own mind, you just didn't think of yourself as an addict because you were functioning. But then when you're addressing the alcohol and drug issue and somebody finally says, you also need to deal with the sexual addiction issue, when did there start to become some momentum there that you started saying, yeah, I need to really address this?
Well, what a great question. On the one hand, it was really a much more fearful proposition, because addressing sexual addiction is really addressing something core and fundamental to who I am as a human being, as opposed to some substance or chemical.
Right.
But at the same time, because I was a year sober and I'd been recovering from the drugs and alcohol for a year, I had started to be used to listening for an inner voice. I had had a spiritual relationship or a spiritual experience that helped me, that convinced me that the God who made me loved me, cared for me, and would do for me what I could not do for myself. So there was a very elemental and simple faith in place for me. And I just went into that. And I knew that, okay, I needed to go to 12-step meetings. I needed to go be honest with my counselor. I needed to start being honest with other people about these areas of my life. And I actually believe in a very simple, minute kind of way that if I just did these simple things, that my future was going to be better than my past, and that maybe, just maybe, the life that I had always wanted for since I was a little bitty boy was possible. So I just did it. I went to my meetings. I saw my counselor. Often I was given homework to do of reading and journaling. I did the work.
Wow. David, thanks so much for sharing with us. Listen, before we go, just let our listeners know how they can access your website and where they can get some copies of your books.
Well, thank you, Jonathan. The website is operationintegrity.org. There's an 800 number there. There's an email there. Both my books, the book on sexual recovery from sexual addiction, is titled When Lost Men Come Home, Not for Men Only. That's available, of course, at all of the major booksellers online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You can also get signed copies by contacting us through the website. I also have a book out, Our Journey Home, which touches on many different kinds of addiction. And you can get it, of course, online at the online retailers, your local bookstore, or once again, if you'd like a signed copy, just contact me through that operation.
Thanks, David, and we look forward to having you back here again next week on the Pure Sex Radio broadcast.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.